Hello, Jets fans and A-League fans. If you're tuning into us and listening via your podcast apps or via Football Nation Radio, or if you're just listening to us online through newcastlefootball.net, welcome and thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Jets Dream. I'm your host, David, and we're going to look over the 2-0 double defeat and the double header down against between the Newcastle Jets and Melbourne City in both the A-League and the W League last weekend. Before we have a look ahead to the weekend that promises to be very interesting for the Jets as they travel over to take on an in-form Wellington Phoenix in the A-League, while also hosting on Thursday night Perth Glory at McDonald Jones Stadium in the W League in what should be a very important game for the for our ladies team as they look to try and get back into contention for a final spot and maintain some presence. Joining me this week is in a sense of deja vu. It's just the two of us again tonight. Andy, welcome back onto the pod, mate. How are you?
Just the two of us.
pretty much.
I'm great, David. I thought I was dropped after my Liverpool reference, but with team members down and out and whatever else, I'm here again and called up, so we'll get into it.
Absolutely, mate, absolutely. And I look forward to having a chat with you over the next hour or so. We'll start off with the A-League last weekend, mate, in what was a 2-0 loss for the Newcastle Jets down in Melbourne, which has been a not-so-happy hunting ground of late for the team. That 2-0 loss secure and some results going against their way in other matches really roots us to the bottom of the A-League table. 2-0 was a good scoreline. Did you think that it flattered us in a way, or was it a pretty fair result?
No, I definitely think that we got out of it pretty well. You know, there was a few chances that City didn't take the most of, and we didn't really offer too much else going forward either. So definitely a result that was, you know, very well deserved for us, really, when you look at what it could have been.
It was described in the commentary by Simon Hill as a really good performance in terms of effort that the team put in. They showed higher levels of pressing and higher levels of ball possession and assertion that we haven't really seen in previous weeks, but yet we weren't able to have that cutting edge that saw us breach Dean Bouzanis and score a goal against City. If we looked at this result in isolation, Andy, would we have been, if you hadn't seen any Jets performances before, if you hadn't, if you didn't know that we were last in the A-League, as I mentioned earlier, would you have looked at it and thought that's the team that's last, or would you have thought, no, that's actually a team that's somewhere around mid-table? And give us something that we can look at in isolation as a sign of improvement in our form and our passages of play under Craig Deans.
I guess the main thing is that it wasn't another 4-0 result, that we actually, you know, did keep out a few chances and did pretty well overall. And, yeah, I guess if you didn't follow the league or follow the Jets closely and just looked at that game, you wouldn't think there was a huge void of difference. But just the quality that City has in the final third with, you know, Craig Noon having just way too much time on the ball and McLaren being able to just continue to pester, it was always going to go that way. So it's certainly, I see a point that if you just watch that and that game only, you'd think there was signs of hope. But you look at your Sydneys and your Melbourne City and you just see what it is we're lacking at the moment, and hopefully we can address that soon.
It was an unchanged lineup that Craig Deans named for the clash, and Nigel Bugard didn't come back into the lineup as many thought that he may have. He wasn't even named in the team. Unchanged. There was one change with Luis Italiano coming in between the sticks in replacement for the injured Glenn Moss. But in terms of outfield players, mate, it was the same lineup that we've seen now 2 weeks running. Did that surprise you at all, or given what we discussed about Canter's form, I thought that there may have been a change there, but with Matt Redenton not yet back in the country that we're aware of, well, certainly at the time of the game, were there any obvious replacements to come in for him?
No, I think overall there was nothing too shocking about the lineup that Craig Dean's put out, obviously, as you said, with Italiano getting his chance through the injury to Glenn Moss, that we just don't seem to have the quality and the depth of the squad. The depth that we do have, you sort of look and go, well, are any of those players going to guarantee anything more? I think we discussed that maybe Angus Thurgate would get a run, and I thought perhaps we'd see that, but I don't think in the early signs of Craig Dean's that he has the same level of, not necessarily the same level of belief, but definitely doesn't want to just keep throwing Angus Thurgate out there for the hope that he'll pull off the miraculous one day.
Yeah. And look, I suppose it makes sense that Abdi Oloroyo, a player with vast international experience as well as footballing experience, is a player that we'd be looking to have a greater level of impact and influence on a game than what we could probably expect from Angus Thurgate at this point in time. The match was also, and we talk about the pre-game with the lineups certainly, but the match was also very historical in one sense, with Kate Jasowitz becoming the Hyundai A-League's first female referee, which is fantastic to see. And overall, I thought she officiated the match very well. And the fact that we're not talking about the referee's performance is credit to the way that she officiated that match and took control in what was a great performance, and great to see the standard of referees lifting across the league, because we have been quite critical of a number of referees within the league so far, and hopefully this is the start of a promising career for her, and one that sees her maintain the high level of standard that she's already shown us here.
Yeah, and I guess too, for years we had the same. I think there was Jared Gillett, Strebre, and a few others that, you know, it was the same sort of four referees calling the whole competition. So to get that, you know, variety now, and to have the variety in obviously gender with Kate coming in, but also, you know, nationality, we've had a few exchange referees and stuff like that. It's giving a bit more flavor to the league, for lack of better words. Like, we're seeing just the difference in, not everyone is coming out of the same school of referee. So we're getting to see how some referees rather are, you know, letting a bit more go than perhaps some of the Australian referees would, and all that sort of stuff. So it's certainly refreshing for the league.
Yeah, I mean, and we look at the emergence of Alex King last year and in what high regard he's now held within the A-League refereeing circles. Many people are very impressed with his performances, and I've been pretty happy with Arezi Fagani, who's come out as well, but he has reffed in the Asian Champions League, certainly, and I believe with the Asian Cup as well. So it just continues to increase the options that the league has in terms of officiating, which is excellent. What wasn't excellent, though, was the start for the Jets with a very early Craig Noon goal, which disappointingly came through a very direct counter-attacking move from a Jets corner, mate. And we were caught at the back and couldn't recover from Jamie McLaren's pace in behind. And Craig Noon was able to curl in from the edge of the box.
Yeah, and one of the points I'd like to make with this is I've been a pretty big advocate for Nick Fitzgerald, but he was just caught absolutely napping. Like, Craig Noon was, the ball was put over to him and Fitzgerald did nothing to get over.
There was no urgency there.
Put a challenge on or anything like that, to the point where Craig Noon was able to pretty much take his time, stop, check the wind direction, put it onto his other foot, wave to the crowd, and then maybe have a shot. So, you know, it was like he was teeing off in a golf game or something. And to be allowed that much time from a player that has been in the league and been a professional footballer for a long time, I was pretty disappointed after, you know, asking for him to do more for so long.
Yeah, look, it was really bad. I mentioned there, I didn't see any urgency from Fitzgerald when he was tracking back. Miller was also caught as well. And Nugarkovic tried to shut down McLaren, but McLaren, I think, managed to thread it through his legs and found Noon at the top of the box. But it was really disheartening for the Jets because it's the second early goal that we've conceded under Craig Deans. And it's that sort of kick in the teeth that can really throw any sort of pre-game preparation that you've had all week, pre-game conversations, all that sort of thing, just completely out the window and make you wonder what's going on. And it was kind of all City from that point. And Italiano's probably not completely, I don't know, I'm not a goalkeeper. So I heard people say that Italiano possibly could have done better with Noon's strike. It was fantastic and right in the corner, but was his original positioning for the shot as good as it could have been? I'm not too sure, but he certainly saved us at the half hour mark with Noon also getting a pass in behind McLaren. McLaren tried it really first time, but a great save from Italiano prevented what was going to be another goal for City.
Yeah, and I think if, I don't know if it was just the camera angle during the game, but I was sort of questioning whether if that did go in the net, whether it would possibly, but then again, maybe not go to VAR. And I thought there might have been a, you know, toe hair offside or something like that, that they might have called it back on. But it didn't. So, yeah, I guess we'll say great effort and good save from Italiano. But on Noon's first goal, you can't really say too much about Italiano when that much time is given to him to pretty much line up the shot and decide exactly where he's going to put it. But there was, as you said, no urgency for him to take the shot in the first place. So, interesting.
The Jets almost got one back before halftime where Matt Miller met a corner and managed to put a downward header towards the City goal, but Bizanis was able to keep it out in what was probably our best moment of the first half, I'd say, mate. Would you agree?
Yeah, and it seems to be a part of Matt Miller's game that he, you know, has gotten, he's scored, I think, one or two from a corner with his head. And
he's a former high jumper, I believe.
Yeah, well, he, you know, has a fairly, like, he's built for heading, as nice as you can put that. Like, he has that big sort of flat head that would be great for getting the ball into different positions. So let's hope that he can. My big concern is when you see that happening, that every corner becomes get it to Matt Miller, that becomes predictable. He gets marked out of the game in those instances and it's just no longer effective. So I hope that we have sort of the tactician minds looking at three or four different corner options and not just the one, try and put it on Miller's head.
I mean, we had another chance not long after halftime. Some fantastic work by Arroyo down the left-hand side of City's box. He made a good run to the byline and was able to cut it back. And Hoffy just skied it. And we've been talking about Hoffy being out of form a bit, and we could talk about it now. He just looks like he's lacking energy to me. And again, he puts that away. It's a completely different game, and the Jets are able to build some momentum into that second half, but instead it sends it over and the body language just shoulders slump, heads go down, and it was another chance wasted for the Jets.
Yeah, when I saw that, I straight away thought of, you know, the word desperation, that we're so desperate to score because we're in that, I think it was in the, you know, Jones era when we weren't really scoring that many goals and we went however long it was without scoring and everyone was just saying, oh, the Jets can't score, and it became this really difficult time. I worry if that's perhaps what's happening with this squad now, that people are saying we've lost that ability to score. So then when players who usually put it in the net pretty easily get in that position, they're overthinking it and the pressure gets too much and they end up putting it over the top. So it'd be interesting to see how that
goes. I was going to say, we did actually get the ball into the back of the net the 58th minute. Hoffie and Arroyo combined this time. It was the other way around with Hoffman threading the ball through to Arroyo, who put the ball in the back of the net, but he was flagged offside, rightly so. He was a mile off. Really disappointing for Arroyo because there's a lot of endeavour there, but there's not a lot of end product at the moment.
He has certainly impressed me more, though, since he's come back from his injury. I don't know whether it's that he doesn't seem to me to be playing as the number nine or whatever that they've sort of put him into. He's been playing more coming in from the wide and creating opportunities, sort of similar to what Dimi's done in the past. And if we just have either that quality from himself or, you know, another player that can be there for the easy tap-in, we will see results from this squad.
We were going to be, it was important that we converted and got on the score sheet, but we were punished, you know, 5 minutes after that offside call where the ball was up and Harrison Delbridge connected with the header and it struck Topol Stanley's arm. After play continued on, VAR check was requested and Jasowicz ran straight over and looked at the screen and awarded a penalty to Melbourne City as a handball to Topol Stanley. How did you see the penalty, mate?
Yeah, I guess, look, the rules of the game have changed around handballs and all that sort of stuff, and there was a lot of talk and a bit of a display from one Mark Bosnich about what is and isn't a natural way to jump and all this sort of stuff. I don't feel as though we, you know, stopped any opportunity from coming to be, and by no means did we get an advantage from the way that that hit. But I guess, yeah, if you jump like that now, you're opening yourself up to that being a thing. So I guess if it was City's arm that it hit, I'd be screaming penalty all day. But being that it was the Jets, I'm kind of like, oh, no, it's not, but them the rules, I guess.
Yeah, I actually thought that position of Topol Stanley's arm was influenced by some impact during the challenge and that he was thrown off balance as a result. Whether that impact for me was cause for a foul, that's up for debate. We've seen less called a penalty, so I think that it was a correct interpretation of the rules. Whether the rules are right or not, again, is up for debate. But you are right, the interpretation of the laws of the game there are that was a handball. But I do think that his hands were there as a result of the contact that came in from the challenge between himself and Delbridge. And not sure whether it's a penalty, but I think that's the reason why.
Yeah, and I think Andy Harper in commentary was saying something similar that, you know, he sort of jumped with his arms sort of out but lower down below his shoulders, and then as he's been nudged or hit in the back, he's kind of flung the arm up and it's hit his arm, and then the sort of flick of the wrist has gone up and made the ball travel upwards. But I guess it comes back to two people contesting for a ball that's there to be contested for. What do you do?
Yeah. Well, you've got me worried now if I'm agreeing with Andy Harper. I'm a little bit concerned, but
yeah, it concerns me. You're obviously connected to the area, but sometimes, like, he's the one that is the biggest Jet supporter of the Fox Sydney FC group, but at the same time, he asks some strange questions at times. So let's
see how he goes. I'll say this one thing about Andy Harper. He is a penalty specialist. So if we want someone on penalties and talking to us about penalties and giving their opinion on penalties, Andy Harper's probably the man. Jamie McLaren steps up and he rolls the penalty away. Italiano, he nearly got to it. I thought Italiano, but McLaren scores again against the Jets and made it 2-0, and by that time the game was out of sight.
Yeah, and Italiano did do well to pick the side and get there. With the new rule of not being able to leave your line until the ball's struck, I don't see too many penalties getting saved. I feel that it's obviously a penalty. The idea of it is to advantage the attacking team, but yeah, the whole not being able to leave your line just makes it near impossible. I think you've seen so many more goals if they don't put it over the bar or put it wide. It's usually in the net. There's very few being saved at the moment.
The Jets did have their chances. I mentioned a few before, and it was some last-ditch defending from Harrison Delbridge that saw Demi Petratos's shot cleared off the line. And Kane Sheppard, right towards the end of the game as well, had some lovely whip on a cross from Matt Miller, and it found him at the back post, and he's knocked it over the top. And it's the Jets just literally cannot seem to be able to buy a goal at the moment. We did score against Sydney last week, but the confidence of our front four players really looks to be shot, and something there. We almost need like the floodgates to open, I think, mate, to give the team some confidence and to find an early goal and just let them relax into a game. And I think that's really important. But what do you think is the change that could see us bring some confidence back into our attacking lineup?
It's easy for me to say, but I think it's just those chances going in. You know, Dimi scores and he's got the confidence. You've seen with Steve Yagakovich now how he is, you know, he was close to putting one in when I think it was off that same moment after Dimi shot.
Yeah, he hit it real hard. He hit it sweetly, but it just went wide.
Yeah, but it was definitely like you were sort of sitting there going, so for it to curl away. But before he started getting the two or three goals that he scored, I don't think he would have hit that. He would have ran, tried and dribbled it in the box and set it up for someone else. So you've seen, I guess, in my opinion, off the goals that he's scored, the confidence he's now got to have a hit. So maybe we do just need a few to go in. And you always hear that the goals are going in at training, but training environment is a lot different to a game environment.
Yeah, it is. The Jets almost were 3-0 down as well very late on after those two chances I mentioned with Jamie McLaren also missing a sitter. We've spoken at length during the season about the difficulties we're experiencing at left back, and those attacks seem to have been the focus down that left-hand side seems to have been limited in some regards, and now teams are really exploiting the defensive weaknesses in Matt Miller, and I think that it's now becoming an issue that both of our fullbacks seem quite our fullback sides are quite defensively frail. What do you think we need to do to address these situations? Is it a personnel thing? Is it our line sitting too high up? Do we need to sit deeper? But what does that do for our midfield? Or is it more of a tactic sort of approach that we need to look at possibly a different formation?
I feel like we should lean towards the tactical side. I think that when you look at our, let's say, meant-to-be back line of Topper Stanley, Nigel Bougard with Miller, and I would say Bobby Burns on either side, Burns and Miller are clearly more in that, I would say, wing-back position where, especially under Ernie, he was wanting them to get up the field similar to what a Daniel Georgievski does, but can then get back and defend, because whilst Topper's fast for the size that he is never going to be able to keep up or outrun someone like Jamie McLaren, and we saw that. So I would say that one of the things we might have to look at is with it was reported tonight that Boogs might come back this weekend or maybe the following weekend, perhaps throwing him in and having, you know, the confidence that Chopper can go and do his job because Boogs is there to marshal everyone else. Maybe that will help just solidify things a bit. And maybe we have to look at whether we rotate out Kanarovsky and put in someone else that can maybe play the ball a bit more through midfield, because he just seems to be frustrated at the moment. I don't know what it is. He seems to be back to the canner that we all used to heap it on, and that's not something we want, because he's become quite the, you know, legend of the club in the past few seasons because he had turned it around so well.
Look, if Boogs is back, I'd actually, and we're jumping ahead a little bit in terms of the preview for the Western Sydney Wanderers game, but I think we need to look at a different type of system, particularly for most of the teams have more mobile, have mobile fullbacks that give their teams width and allow their forward wide players to tuck in a bit further. I actually think we need to potentially look at a 3-4-1-2 or 3-5-2 type system, where if Boogs is back, I'd be looking to have a back three: Jackson, Boogaard and Topper, Burns and Miller on the wings, Kander and Stevie in the centre, with Dimmy in behind Arroyo and Thurgate. That's the lineup that I'd be looking to put out, particularly this weekend against Wellington Phoenix, the way they set up as well, trying to nullify the impact that Liberato Kakache has. I think that extra player in defence could certainly short-term look to solidify and stop us from leaking goals while allowing that extra player to be back while we can potentially push a couple more forward. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a great shout. One thing I've found interesting when I was looking at sort of how the team lined up, and I don't know if it was how it eventuated exactly, but it looked like, or at least on the formation chart that I was looking at, that it was Arroyo up front with Dimmy and Fitzgerald sort of either side, with Hoffman in the middle. And that to me seems like an interesting choice, to put Hoffman in the middle of those two in an attacking mindset. So perhaps to, look at, and Wellington are a very attacking team. You hear so much of how they've taken the blueprint of Sydney FC and just applied that with the players that they have. So to have a very attacking team, maybe we look at what got us great success by solidifying our defence and trying to break them down on a counter-attacking style, because we should have the pace with Fitzgerald, Dimmy, even Arroyo when he's fully up to speed. And if you were to, as you said, bring Thurgate in, he can run for the best part of 70 minutes and not even be fazed by it. So why not?
Interesting. Who was your player of the match, mate?
So my player of the match I actually gave to Bobby Burns. I just think that he has really sort of found himself in the last couple of weeks, and we're seeing glimpses of what he could be.
Yeah, look, I actually can't disagree with that. I thought he was our standout player too of the match, and very worthy recipient, as you say there. He's starting to show what we all hoped that he could, and no much more so than the less focus that we're paying on that left-hand side is probably an indication of that. So, yeah, Bobby Burns, player of the match for me as well. We move on now to talk about the W League fixture that was before the A League game, and between again the City, Melbourne City, and the Newcastle Jets. And the Jets again went down, also 2-0, again conceding a very early goal inside the first 10 minutes with Milicia Mijatovic scoring for Melbourne City before Emily Van Egmond also tapped home very early in the second half to make it 2-0. Very, very much almost mirror image games in terms of scoring for both sets of fixtures. The concern for the Jets, though, would be that Nicky Flannery appeared to sustain quite a serious leg injury. I think it was an ankle injury, being substituted for Tegan Collister after just 13 minutes on the pitch. She's going to be a very tight turnaround for Flannery to make it. She's been an ever-present in the team so far this year. Does her injury concern you at all, mate?
Yeah, I was caught glimpses of that game, but it didn't look good when she went down. It was kind of the go down straight away, sort of wave the arm and say, look, I need someone to come and help me out here. I didn't know this, but apparently she is a fairly injury-prone player and has been had a few injuries over her recent time, especially when she was at Canberra. But she is a quality player, and I don't think we lose much if Tegan Collister is to start in her spot.
Yeah, she certainly came very highly rated from Canberra United and as a player with a turn of pace. And to be honest, I haven't really seen that from Flannery so far this season in the matches that I've watched. She has quite often failed to beat her player and as a result, appears to be quite a confidence player where she's looking for that first touch, that first pass to go her way. And if it doesn't, then she sort of drifts in and out of matches, whereas Collister's been a little bit more. She has a bit more of that that hunger, that desire to really pressure players, and I've been impressed with for someone just coming into the team. I think this is her second season. Just someone coming in, I've been really impressed with what she has brought to the team. But if we look at the stats overall for this game, it was 67% possession to Melbourne City, 33% for the Jets. But in terms of shots and passes, like Melbourne outpassed us 2-1, essentially. Our passing accuracy was again around the 70%, almost 88% for Melbourne City. It was the shots 23-9, 8 on target, 2 for the Jets. They just beat us in every key stat and were probably worthy winners and continue their streak of 8 consecutive wins. And it's no wonder that they're top of the table, mate.
Yeah, and I can see them going on and doing quite well once again.
I think they'll do quite well, yeah.
It wouldn't be too much of a stretch to say that they will go I think it would be undefeated for the season because they only had that one draw against us and everything else has been wins for them. So, yeah, just a quality side stacked full of, Matildas and fringe players that are always going to do well. And unfortunately, we're not at that stage at the moment.
No, we're not. And as I mentioned there, the Jets have a very short turnaround. So if you are listening to this through Football Nation Radio on a Thursday, the game will kick off on Thursday night. If you're listening to this through the Jetstream podcast at the very earliest, you'll be listening to this on Wednesday. The Jets kick off at 7:30 at McDonald Jones Stadium on Thursday night, this Thursday night. When they take on Perth Glory, and it's Perth Glory in 8th spot with 2 points. Perth Glory, who were grand finalists last year, lost a couple of key players, obviously, and they're really struggling this year. And the Jets' only victory this season coming against them over in Perth. Can we do the double against them this year?
We played really well in that game when we played them over there, but I unfortunately just don't see it. I think best case scenario, we might come out with a draw. The girls just don't seem to have the confidence at the moment. And there seems to be a few, like even your people that don't usually make huge amounts of mistakes, like your Cassidy Davis and all them, are just allowing a little bit of error to creep into their game. So it's also very interesting that they're playing that as a standalone game at McDonald Jones Stadium. I thought they would have done the whole
gone to number one
thing. And it's very interesting that on a Thursday night, I can't imagine there to be a great deal of atmosphere there for that game.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get there. It's going to be difficult for me because Thursdays are a very difficult night within our family, running around with kids at daycare and those sorts of things. So I'll have to see how I go. But mate, I'm actually complete opposite to you. I'm very confident that the team can be up for this. any of Perth's Matildas are currently out, and they're off in camp, I believe. So now's a perfect time for the Jets to be in front at home. Perth traveling all the way from Perth across to Newcastle, which is not a very easy thing to do. You're at least on the very least one flight, possibly two if you're going through Brisbane direct to Newcastle. I really think that we are a good shout here, and I'm tipping us for probably our biggest win of the season, 3-0.
Well, I hope it plays out for you.
Well, thank you very much. And that concludes our pod. No, what was your if you're predicting the Jets not to get anything from this in terms of a win, what are you thinking the score will be?
I think it'll be a 1-1 draw. I think it'll be a late sort of goal for each team. But yeah, I think they'll play out a draw in this game.
Okay, fair enough. We'll move on now to some news, still no decision at this point in time for the A-League team on who their coach is going to be. But it was very interesting to see that the tip for everyone is that it's going to be one Carl Robinson of Welsh player, former Welsh international player for Wolves, also former coach and player for Vancouver Whitecaps. He was spotted in the stands alongside Laurie McKenna. He'd be he is obviously one of the six names, one of the three overseas names that are linked with the job and certainly being interviewed for the job. No announcement at this point in time. Laurie McKenna came out on Tuesday and in the Newcastle Herald and said that he took Robinson back to Sydney Airport, dropped him off and saw him on his way back to Canada and thanked him for his time. Are you buying, Laurie, that the search goes on? Do you think that Robinson's the name and we're just going away to formalise things? Or do you think he came, he saw, he's being very thorough in his approach? And, it may just be a bit of a show. What do you think, Andy?
Yeah, I don't know how often it's done where a prospective manager is brought in and shown around in such a public arena, like they were sitting pretty much by themselves in an empty grandstand, and made it very easy once Fox knew that they were there to find them. I guess, why not bring him into that environment? Give him a general admission ticket and say, go sit in the stands and we'll meet you at halftime and you can tell us what you think or something. But perhaps he is going back to, as reported, assess the offer from the club, or maybe he's seen what he has to work with and has thought, this isn't for me. One thing that did excite me about, and obviously we don't know whether he is coming in or not, but just that fact that he's been in the MLS, which is another salary capped league, makes me think that he hopefully would have a bit more of an understanding. Whereas if you see people like Robbie Fowler openly criticizing that he doesn't understand the league and the salary caps and all that sort of stuff. So perhaps that could be a good thing. He has the link with, was it Bernie Abini that he took to Vancouver while he was there? Who apparently is struggling to get game time. Maybe that could be through that and the whole Laurie link up and everything. You just don't know. But it's interesting that you're not really hearing of anyone else on the shortlist, and I don't know if the club financed Robinson coming over or how that all works. But, interesting that it was done like that. But then you think back to, I think it was just before Scott Miller came in when we had this random link to Graham Arnold and FFA bring him up and just showed him through the stadium, and that was about it, decision made sort of thing. So be interesting to see how it all goes from here and what other names get thrown up now. But it was definitely a final sort of he's the man, he's there, going to take over thing.
Oh, yeah, look, it certainly made for an interesting and exciting conversation point during the game. There certainly... If it is a case of the Jets and also Robinson doing their own due diligences on each other, it's very thorough. So I certainly, and Bodes, it bodes well for the future that we are looking to be thorough, that we are not looking for a short-term solution to our coaching situation, and that we want to invest in someone who is going to fit within the mold of the club, but also the potential changes to the league, but also experience in operating within tight budgets, because we need to be realistic. That's what we're working with. And I suppose his win percentage ratio of about 37% isn't really fantastic, but it would probably be enough to get you about certainly in the lower parts of the finals in this league.
Yeah, and I guess it, you know, when Laurie did his press conference after they let Ernie go, one of the things that he spoke a lot about was the mantra of, you know, bringing in a coach that would be respected. And sure, Carl Robinson might be for some of the clubs that he'd played for and all that sort of stuff, but managerial-wise, does an MLS coach give you much more than, say, a, you know, well-rounded A-League coach? And I was listening to Around the Block earlier today, catching up on some of their pods that I've missed, and they made an interesting connection that some of the most successful A-League coaches are Australian coaches that just understand that culture, understand the players, because you end up having a majority Australian squad. So you need to know when you, you know, throw an arm around someone or when you have a go at them. So it just all comes back to that man management that you may not necessarily get from someone that is coming in to prove themselves and the players don't know much of. So it'll be interesting. If it does happen, I'm not going to be upset about it. And I think it'll be a good appointment, but just the whole coming in, making it look like he's the guy to go out, and even the way that, like, I'm sure Laurie probably put it with a bit of his, you know, sarcastic tongue-in-cheek thing of, oh, I dropped him at the airport, he's gone. But yeah, it's just interesting that we're not hearing at the moment of any of the other five candidates or whatever it is.
Yeah, no, it is. And I suppose that they may be people who are still in jobs. You never know. It's highly unlikely, but the Jets are just looking to keep their cards close to their chest, because realistically, there's two other clubs that are on the lookout for full-time coaches for either this current season or next season, at the very least in Victory and Western Sydney Wanderers. We also haven't heard any more news on Matt Redenton, whether he was successful or not in his trial with Reading. So we'll keep an eye out on the news or the Twitters or all those sorts of things for that, to see whether he will be departing the club because of a successful trial, or whether he'll be returning to see out the season with the Jets, and with the aim of, I suppose, for him getting a new contract or a renewed contract under a new coach. We'll move on to the preview for this weekend's clash, where the Newcastle Jets travel to Wellington to take on the fourth place Phoenix at a very unusual time of 5:15 p.m. on Friday afternoon. So just no better way to walk in after work, sit down and watch some A-League. If you're lucky enough to knock off at 5 o'clock, and be home within 15 minutes. How do you think the Jets are going to line up for this one, Andy? I've thrown my my lineup out there that I'd be looking for a back three. I'm expecting Bugard's going to be recalled this weekend. Do you think we'll see similar, or what changes are you expecting for the team, if any at all?
See, I'm surprised that it's been talked about that Bugard will come back. I know it's been mentioned that it's a possibility for the last couple of weeks, but Wellington is a pretty decent commitment. They didn't want to take him to, I think it was Perth or somewhere else, because they weren't sure about him travelling. And now his first game back is going to be, you know, our one and only international game. So that's a bit interesting. I don't really see him coming back this week, and therefore I don't see too much changing. So, yeah, I unfortunately think we'll throw out the same lineup that we did for last week's game.
The Phoenix were defeated last week, where many thought that they, you and I both included, thought they would have beaten Brisbane Roar in Brisbane. They'll be looking to bounce back this weekend, no doubt, in front of their crowds that just continue to grow through the unexpected success of this team, a team that many had predicted at the beginning of the season to be the position that we're in at the moment.
Yeah, and I guess that's ultimately what everyone wants for the league. Everyone wants Wellington to be a team that's supported and give that little bit of point of difference. Again, as you said, horrendous time for us to be watching it. I would hope that the ratings justify it in New Zealand, that it's a good time for them. But yeah, it'll be an interesting game for sure. They'll be looking to bounce back from that performance against Brisbane, and definitely to be on home soil. It's a place where we have never really gotten any joy out of. I'm sure you know more than me on what our win
is,
but I imagine it's...
Yeah, unfortunately, Wellington really is a graveyard for the Jets. It's not one very happy hunting ground. I was there for the match last year, our last fixture that we had against Wellington, which was a 4-1 defeat. Roy O'Donovan scoring our own goal while David Williams scored a hat-trick, for those that remember it. Our fixtures there in 20 matches, we've only won four on four occasions. Phoenix have won on 13. Overall, between the 37 fixtures we've had 11 wins. Phoenix have had 20. We've drawn six. So it's... we've only ever scored, we're generally outscored 3-1 when we play in New Zealand. And the Phoenix have scored the first goal on 22 occasions. We've scored it on 14. What I will say about this is for the Jets, it's a real opportunity to go there and just try and give it to a team that are actually going to come at us and not look to sit back. They are a team that they do hit very well on the counter, but for me, we've got to shut down David Ball, because if we don't shut him down or Davila down, then Phoenix are just going to be able to run riot against us, and we will again we'll extend the unfortunate record that we currently have of 7 matches without a win. And that's not something we want to see.
No, definitely. And I would imagine that the guys would travel over on Thursday, if not Wednesday afternoon. So, again, another shorter week of training. And I just think, again, we'll struggle to get anything out of this game, unfortunately.
So what's your prediction for the match, Andy?
I think we'll go down 3-1 in this match.
Yeah, I'm not going to tip us for a loss. I'm going to have some sort of faith that we can get something. I don't think we will get a win, but I hope that we can get a draw. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. Hopefully, we look to with Bugard coming back in, we bring some extra solidity into that lineup. And it's very interesting as well that I talked about before having a back three or back five with 2 strikers up top. I'm just having a look at the lineups from our last match in Wellington, and I had completely forgotten about this until now. Glenn Moss and a back five of Daniel Georgevski, Nigel Bugard, Nikolai Topol-Stanley, Lachlan Jackson, and John Katrumbas. And I remember sitting in the stand and thinking, oh, this is not going to be too bad. And David Williams scored within the first minute. And then that was it. And we were on the back foot from then. It was a midfield three of Cantor, Stevie, and Dimmy with Jair and Roy O'Donovan up top. So, yeah, I'm kind of in two minds now about my suggestion and just how much that might actually come off. It's I've seen that and I've just scared myself as to what it could be, but I'm going to say a 1-1 draw.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if Johnny Katrumbas maybe gets left out of the squad altogether. I saw that and he's a player that causes mixed emotions. But Costa Petrados apparently absolutely turned it on in the youth league game last week, and maybe he could be recalled. There was something like 4 goals in the game.
Four of the 5 goals he scored, yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if maybe there is that rotation, because as great of a guy as Johnny is and at times shows some real quality, it just hasn't worked for him this season. I don't think that when he does come on, you kind of, at least I sit there and go, well, is this going to be the game where he absolutely turns it on, or is it just going to be where he sees the game out for the last 10, 20 minutes?
Yeah, I don't think that we're going to drop Johnny out the team. I think that he plays a role within the squad. We're quite thin at centre-back, and his versatility to play both in midfield and centre-back and also on the full-back roles as well is too good to drop out the team. But we do often not use all the 7 spots on our bench, so perhaps Costa Petrados has earned himself a spot on the bench. We will leave that there and we'll look ahead to the other fixtures for the round just before we wrap up for the week. The following our match at 7:30 is the Big Blue Melbourne Victory versus Sydney FC. Andy, Melbourne, second week after sacking Marco Kurz, will now look to play the leaders, the runaway leaders, and a team coming off the bye, Sydney FC. What's your prediction here?
I think Sydney FC will run away with it and get a 4-2 result, but I thought this game was always meant to be played as close to or on Australia Day, and that would have been great because it would have meant that we didn't have a 5:15 kickoff.
Yeah, well, it's I think that the Sydney FC football machines will just keep on powering on. I'm going to predict a 3-0 win for them down in Melbourne. On Saturday at 5 p.m. is the first of 2 games. Central Coast hosts Brisbane Roar, a battle down the bottom with seventh place Brisbane Roar. It's amazing what a win can do against the 10th place Mariners. How many do you think Brisbane Roar will win by?
I actually do think Brisbane will win 3-0 with one of those goals coming from a Kai Rolls own goal, because that seems to be the thing. That would be his third in 3 weeks. So
he's the Richard Dunn of the A-League.
He's got to do something.
Was it Richard Dunn that scored all the Premier League own goals?
Oh, I'm not sure, but you're typing very fast, so I guess you...
I am. I'm just having a look. Yeah, it's Richard Dunn there with 10. So Kai Rolls, the Richard Dunn at the A-League. I'm going to say Brisbane Roar for a 2-0 victory there. The following them, the game in Melbourne again at Amy Park, second game in 2 days. Melbourne City will host Perth Glory. Second versus third. Perth win, they go ahead of City. City win, they put some space between them and Perth Glory. They're 2 points ahead at this point in time. I'm actually going to say Perth will win in the Bruno Fornaroli derby and take out a 2-1 win.
Yeah, I think that we'll see a 2-2 draw. I don't think Melbourne City can actually hold it together to see a win here and put that daylight between them, so we'll go with the draw.
I'd love to see Bruno score a goal and do what Mario, in the theme of Mario Balotelli, to stand there, lift his shirt over his head and have a picture of Warren Joyce and says, "Was about me." That'd just be fantastic. But we'll remain to be seen whether that happens. Sunday, one fixture, 6 p.m. kickoff. Western United take on Adelaide at Witten Oval, a new home ground for Western United, again an AFL Oval, but one that is slightly more conducive to football. It's a little bit closer to where the ground's a little bit tighter. Western United were electric against the Mariners last week. Adelaide, I think, will struggle in this match. Remains to be seen, though, whether Diamante will come back. Adelaide missing Alhassan Touré. I'm going to pick a 1-1 draw here, Andy. Both sides are decent, but I think that the players that are out will have more of an impact than the players that are there.
Yeah, I think that Western United might get a 2-1 victory. I just feel like Western United are going to continue to be this team that goes on a little run for three or four games and then drops off, but will always be in that sort of, you know, jostling for the fifth, sixth position in the table this year.
Mm. All right, mate. Well, that wraps up our podcast. I hope that everyone who has tuned in today has enjoyed it. Thank you very much for the downloads. If you'd like to give us a review on iTunes, please do. You can find us through all the social sites at Jetstream Newey, or one word, Newey with a N-E-W-Y. If you've enjoyed us, please give us a shout out. Let us know. Thank you very much, Andy, for joining me this week.
No worries at all, Dave. We'll do it all again next week.
We will. And thank you again. Also, if you're tuning in through FNR, thanks. Thanks for taking the time to stick with us through this hour. Until next week, go the Jets.
Go the Jets.
Oh, I'm down, Benjamin.